Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for baseball today. It's the Giants and the Guardians wrapping up this three-game series. It's Alex Wood on the hill for the Giants today, left-hander, and a right-hander, we haven't seen him before, Aaron Civale for the Cleveland Guardians, as I make it through another open without saying the other word about Cleveland. All right, it's time to bring in the professor. And that is Ron Wotus, of course, the assistant to the player development director and one of the best coaches ever in the history of the San Francisco Giants. Well, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Marty. Happy Easter, and hope you have a wonderful day today.
Yeah, that's right. I should wish it to everybody today. Happy Easter, and if you celebrate Passover, happy Passover, and it's a holiday weekend. And well, holidays in baseball. I know you enjoy holidays now that you're retired, although Laurie says you're now a full-time worker as opposed to just working all the time.
That's right.
You looking forward to some holidays, like a July 4th or something like that?
Well, I wish I could say that we had time to enjoy them. I mean, you might get a glimpse of the fireworks from the dugout. I think once in 24 years, I think we had July 4th off, which was unbelievable. I think that was recently.
Yeah.
But you don't really get to enjoy them too much during the season, you know, just a dinner type thing, you know, Mother's Day, Father's Day, things like that. But it's the holidays in the wintertime that you really get to enjoy, obviously Christmas and Thanksgiving. But in baseball, you know, the other holidays in the summer are not things that you really get to experience the way you'd want to.
Yeah, July 4th is one. I haven't had a July 4th off in many years like you. I was thinking about River Islands in July 4th, and of course it's a good segue into the lakes. I bet I haven't asked Colleen about it. I bet they have a big fireworks display out there.
I bet they do, too. That'd be a wonderful place to see it. You're exactly right. You know, they don't have to worry about an errant firework landing on anything. They have all the lakes in the river to shoot them off. And there's nothing better than July 4th fireworks. I remember when I played for the Pirates with the Three Rivers. You know, they shoot them off where the Three Rivers come together, and the stadium was right there, and you had all the boats out on the water. And it's just a beautiful sight. And I bet you River Islands is doing the same thing with the boaters out there and the fireworks. So that'd be a wonderful place to watch them.
Very good. Pretty good. I'm going to ask Colleen about that, and we'll report back. I bet they do have a good display. River Islands, riverislands.com. It's time for you to discover the islands. It is for me. How's that, Woe?
I like it. I like it. We've discovered it, and I think more people ought to take a peek at it.
All right. Very good. Hey, Friday was Jackie Robinson Day. Everybody wore 42 in the Dodger blue. That 42 is in Dodger blue. But here we are with Jackie Robinson celebrating once again. Maybe your feelings about that. And you've been in baseball a long time. You've seen the Pirates, which is a very integrated team when you played. They had nine starters who were African-American at one point. Tell me about Jackie Robinson and you.
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, obviously the older we get, the more meaningful and the more time we take to really embellish, you know, these types of players and things that happen. At least for me, you know, when you're younger, you're so busy doing your thing, you don't really understand the totality of it. But I was listening to your show yesterday, and I understand they're going to have a Jackie Robinson Museum in New York that they're thinking about putting together, trying to put together. And that should be, because it's probably one of the biggest days in Major League Baseball, in my opinion, now. You know, when it first started, you just knew you were wearing that 42 jersey. But the more you hear about this guy and the more you delve into it, the more you realize just how important he was to baseball. And it brings me back to Dusty Baker a little bit, you know, when I worked with him early in my career, because Dusty used to tell us all the stories, what he dealt with in the South and in Atlanta with Hank Aaron by his side and the stuff he had to put up with. And this was years and years later. So a monumental icon in the game, and I don't think we can hear enough about him.
Now, very strong, Jackie Robinson, very strong when he was chosen by Branch Rickey to be the one to break the color line. But I brought up on the show, during the show, that there were so many others in the Negro Leagues who could have played. And what gets lost in the story a little bit is the racism of the times. And I realize that's where we were in the 30s and 40s and the 20s. But Judge Landis, who ruled baseball, he would not allow the integration of baseball. It was only after he died in 1944 that Branch Rickey sort of put this plan into place. But there were so many who could have played, Josh Gibson and among others. I think we should always remember that part of the Jackie Robinson celebration.
I agree with you 100% because, as you just said, there were many, many other players in the stories of the Negro Leagues and all the great players that could have been involved with Major League Baseball weren't allowed. And you know, we battle it today, obviously, the things that transpire and the moments that we have. So I'm really glad that Major League Baseball has made Jackie Robinson Day one of the bigger days in Major League Baseball. And I think it'll continue to grow and be a great day for everybody in the sport.
Well, it's a good segue into what happened at the ballpark this week when the Padres are in and Mike Shildt, the third base coach, got into it with Anton Richardson and made some comments that allegedly could be interpreted as racist comments. And they had to meet the next day, and he tried to give an explanation of it and sort of double-talked it pretty much. And Anton had to take a picture with him, and it reminded me of Jackie Robinson and Ben Chapman, who was the manager of the Phillies back in 47, who was just vile. Said the most vile things to Jackie, and the Philadelphia brass cracked down on Chapman and said, "You better make it right." And they asked Jackie to come out and take a picture with him, and he reluctantly did. He wouldn't shake his hand, though. He put his hand on the bat, and they both had their hands on the bat. And this Anton Richardson Shildt thing reminded me of that.
Well, that's a great analogy. It was a really disappointing moment in the game for me. I know Anton very well, obviously, for the last 3 years, and this guy is a stand-up guy. He's as honest as the day is long. And I just thought that the whole situation, which Shildt really instigated, because the bench was screaming at Anton when they stole the base, and he was taking a lot of heat. And then for Shildt to come over and stare in the dugout for a minute, you know, he wasn't looking for his friends. I just don't believe that was his intent. And, you know, Anton should have never got thrown out of this game. And that's a whole nother issue. But I really took offense to it. You know, I was watching the game in the press box that day, and I wanted to jump down on the field is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be part of that moment because I've had a couple other experiences with that gentleman, and I just don't believe he's an upfront guy and telling the truth. And I think I was happy that Anton stuck up for himself and called it out.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that happened. And it's important that these things are always called out in the world we live in today. And, again, that we get into the respect for human beings, for each other, and that's something we need in the world today, which is another good segue into the big controversy this week of Dubon bunting in the sixth inning with the big lead. And the question is, the rules say, unwritten rules say, well, you don't pile it on if you've got a big lead that late in the game. How did you feel about that?
Well, this is a difficult one because I see both sides of the issue. And, you know, every dugout's going to look at it differently. But, you know, the one thing that comes to mind is, you know, where do you draw the line and where does it end? You know, if it's 20-2, does it end? You know, and I think that's the argument that Cap and people are making. You know, when do you stop trying to score runs? When do you stop trying? Is it, you know, 5 runs? Is it 6 runs? Is it 8 runs? But I think it's something that's probably good that it's being debated about. But the bottom line for me is I think that, you know, respect and sportsmanship should enter into this thing at some point in time, even though we're in professional sports, because we have our kids watching. And, you know, it's something that I think that we're all striving for in society is respect and sportsmanship. And I'd hate us to lose that element of what we're leading the way with at Major League Baseball.
Yeah, just a question of where to draw the line. And people have pointed out on Twitter and on the show, well, heck, if you're up 9-2 in the sixth inning, you know, a three-run homer, it's 9-5, and all of a sudden you're in the high-leverage guys in the bullpen. So maybe it is something that has to go case by case.
Well, it's interesting. I'm here in San Jose, you know, these last few days, and we're playing the Rockies organization, the Fresno team, and their assistant coach came over to me and asked me my opinion on the game 2 days ago, because the Rockies were up 9-0, and then we came back and made it 9-4, and we had to use a position player to finish the game. And he was asking just that question. You know, they didn't run. They didn't try to keep going because they felt there was a position player on the mound. Although he told me a five-run lead in a ball is not too safe. All it takes is one pitcher to come in there to walk two, hit a guy. There's an error behind him, and it's a tie game or you lose the game. So it's not an easy question to answer, but I think the conversation is good at this point in time.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up with this. It depends on on the baseball play too. A bunt is different than swinging 3-0 and trying to hit the ball, and it's different than stealing a base in the eighth inning when you're up 12-2 as well. So you have to look at the situation. I think that's the only way to do it.
I think so, and I think you look at the whole picture. I think you look at the people in the other dugout too, and you look at your own players, and you know it works both ways. But the last thing you want is for anybody to get hurt. You know, for somebody to throw at somebody. And, you know, so that's probably good that it's being discussed so we don't have these unnecessary beanballs. Again, I'm here in A-ball, and guys are getting hit right and left because the pitchers can't command the ball. And it's scary. I've seen two guys get hit in the head already, and that's the last thing you want to see at any level is people getting injured, and especially not getting injured because of what an opposing club is doing.
Okay. All right. I think we've said it. More going on with you down at San Jose. Well, last week we talked to you at Sacramento, and now you're in San Jose. What's cooking there, and what's the difference the working in San Jose vis-a-vis AAA with Sacramento?
Well, you know, this is the first time I've been back here in 30 years. I managed here in 1990 and 1991, and I've seen a couple people have come up to me that were in this league years ago. Most of them are gone now. But it was nice to check in with them. I mean, this is, you know, grassroots level. It's right after the rookie ball level. So a lot of these guys are first-year players. Their first year in a full season. And they are learning the game. And they're talented, but the games aren't as clean as you would expect at the higher levels. So it's fun to watch. It's fun to watch these greenhorns go about it, and we have some talent here too. I mean, the pitching, we're loaded with pitching, but the big news was last night they just started with the game clock for the first time last night. So they've been playing for a week and they just instituted the time clock, and the game last night was played in 2 hours and 28 minutes in a 9-4 game. And I have to tell you, Marty, it was a little rushed at time. I think with nobody on base, they had to they had 14 seconds for the hitter to get to the box. Okay, not to get to the box. Once he gets up to the box, he has 30 seconds when a new hitter comes up to get to the plate. But once he steps in there and gets ready to go, he has a 30-second clock to first pitch. But then as the at-bat goes along, there's only 14 seconds in between pitches. So the batter has exactly 5 seconds. He's got to be in the box at 9 seconds. So he has 5 seconds to shake off his last swing or whatever it is and get in the box and look at the pitcher. At the 9-second point, he's got to be ready to go, and the pitcher has to deliver the pitch within 9 seconds. Well, usually when the hitter's looking at him, here comes the pitcher. I felt that was a little quite a bit rushed. There was very difficult for these guys to be comfortable with that. With men on base, it's a little better. They have 18 seconds, so the hitter has an extra extra 4 seconds,
yeah,
or so to for the catcher to give the sign and for the pitcher to get the sign and for the pitcher to deliver the ball. But that was the topic of conversation. It was a little bit rushed with nobody on for the hitters.
Well, plus you have to look at the third base coach. I mean, you've been in that position. The hitter's got to step out and look at you. And the third base coach is always going through a bunch of signs. How does that factor into it?
Well, that's the same thing. The third base coaches can't go through 10 or 12 signs. He's got to get his signs in there real quick. And, of course, you're doing the same thing they did in AAA, where you only can throw over to first base twice in an at-bat. And if the pitcher steps off the mound because he got crossed up with the signals or you know, something went awry, that's counted as a throwover. And if you do that, you know, more than twice and you don't get a runner out just stepping off the mound, it's a balk and the runner moves up. So the last thing we want to see are, you know, pitchers and catchers at this level getting crossed up on a pitch and somebody getting hurt that way. So it's, you know, I wish they would have started this in spring training is my only big point, really. You know, let's do this where the players got a chance to do it in preseason, not start it, you know, a week into the season and go from the old rules to the new rules overnight.
Good one. Ron Wotus, of course, with us, fans. You know, it's Sunday morning and we go to school with the professor. Joe Maddon yesterday got in the news, of course, on Friday night. And he walks Corey Seager with the bases loaded. And they're losing at that point, but he's figured, I'll give up one run. I don't want to give up three or four. Angels then miraculously come back to take the lead, and they win the game. But this is not something that's new. He did it before to Josh Hamilton when he was with Tampa Bay. And, whoa, you were there when they walked Bonds with the bases loaded with Arizona, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I was coaching third at the time, and I was as flabbergasted as anybody. But I can understand it with Barry Bonds in that situation. I'm a little bit surprised that he did it with Corey Seager in the situation that he was in, and to add on another run. But of course, he comes back and wins the game. So I guess Joe made the right move.
I guess so. That's what he said. And then there's other reason. Listen to this. I mean, look, you know, Joe Maddon is an interesting guy. He really is. I've always enjoyed talking to him. So they ask him, well, why did you make the move? Any other reason? He says, yeah, I wanted to fire up my team. So by forcing in the run, I wanted my team to be challenged. How about that?
Yeah, it sounds like Joe Maddon. He's always thinking outside the box. I mean, he's the one that would bring in the boa constrictors and the sea turtles and all the other stuff in the clubhouse there, and the mariachi bands for birthdays and everything else. So Joe's always been a forward thinker and outside of the box. And you know what? It adds a little color to the game and gives us something to talk about. And they won the game. So, you know, what can you say? A good move by Joe, I guess. But I'm really shocked that he did it.
Yeah. Did you ever do anything crazy like that when you managed Billy Martin, when he managed the Tigers? They were in a slump and he put all the names in a hat and drew the names out, and that was the batting order. I guess that's not too crazy, but he wanted to change the mojo of the team.
Yeah. You know, when I managed, I didn't. But when I was in AAA with Tommy Sant, one of my favorites, my minor league managers, who had me on a lot of his clubs and was one really responsible for getting me to the big leagues. He did that. You know, the players love that stuff. We picked the lineup out of the hat, and the guys are hooting and hollering. You know, it's a bonding moment for the team, and players like that type of stuff. The craziest thing I ever did is I put the squeeze play on three straight times. So with one strike, with two strikes, and I said, let's try it one more time. And Calvin Murray, he got it down on the third one, and we pushed that run across.
All right, I like it. Hey, let's go to school a little more with the professor here on this Sunday morning. The contact play, and we saw it this week. There was a runner on third and less than two out, of course, and a sort of a slowly hit ball to third, you know, not really that slow, and the runner took off and was thrown out at the plate. Contact play, well, what has to happen there? At some point, you have to read it. If there's a ground ball to third, I imagine, even with the contact play, do you have to go?
Well, the true contact play is a play that you're going no matter what. So it's done with one out. You wouldn't do it with nobody out because, you know, even if the guy batter makes an out, you still have a chance to score without a hit the next time. So it's routinely done with one out. And yeah, you tell the runner, look, you're cheating like a son of a gun. You're anticipating the swing, and as soon as you see the swing in contact, you're breaking for home. If it's a line drive to third or to the infield, you're doubled off because you want to get every advantage to utilize the speed you have at third, and you want to do it with somebody that can really, really run. But you're rolling the dice. You're rolling the dice. It might be hit a couple steps to an infielder's left or right, or it might be hit slow. If it's a bullet right at the infielder and you have a real fast guy and the third baseman's off the line a little, he's not standing right on the base to keep you close, it still may be a close play. You know, it forces a good throw. But that's when you do it, and you usually do it when, you know, you're not confident that the next hitter is going to get a hit with two outs. Maybe you don't like the matchup. It's a tough mm-hmm. lefty on the mound. You got a lefty coming up, and you say, do I want to try to utilize this speed and force the issue and roll the dice, or do I want to wait for a two-out hit lefty against lefty, and my hitter's hitting 150 against lefty?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And boy, that's the essence of coaching. You have to figure that out, and managing too. It's just not that one play that it revolves around a lot of other people. This week, the Giants go into New York to play the Mets. Well, New York baseball, I mean, with the tabloids, the back page and all that, give us a description of what it's like versus going into, you know, Pittsburgh or Milwaukee or something like that.
Well, I think every player, every coach has Gotham marked down on their calendar when they're going to go to New York. And it's New York City. I think everybody enjoys going to Manhattan. It's a different world, and it's a different game out there. It's not a Citi Field now, not Shea Stadium. You have the airplanes going over. You do have the tabloids. For years and years, we'd take the train, the 7 train to Flushing's, and you'd buy the rags when you get on the train, and you'd read the Post. you read the what are the other ones?
The Daily News, Newsday.
Daily News, yes, exactly. And you really marveled at the headlines, right? They had the catchy headlines, and there was always some sort of controversy in the paper. But the Mets this year, I think they're going to be tough. I think Buck Showalter is going to bring that team around, and they have a heck of a team. They signed some really good players. I see Lindor is off to a better start than he was last year. He didn't have quite the year people expected. But I think they're going to be tough, and it's going to be a tough series for the Giants.
The statue of Tom Seaver was unveiled on opening day on Friday. A very emotional time for everybody involved with the Mets. And I don't know, baseball statues, they're beautiful. I think when I was at Comerica Park, I remember seeing like maybe 6 in a row, very closely near the field where all the fans could see it. What do you think about baseball statues? Do you have some favorites?
Yeah, I do, and I think they're fantastic. I think the fans love them. I mean, when you go to a ballpark and you walk around the park and you go to St. Louis and you see one of my favorite and Stan the Man Usual, right? And you see that statue, a player that my dad spoke about all the time. I didn't get to see him play. I'm of Polish descent. And it just adds so much flavor to the stadium and into the city. Another favorite of mine is, of course, I came up with the Pittsburgh Pirates, so Pops is out there. And that's a beautiful statue. It's larger than life. It's one of the bigger statues that I've seen. And Pops was no, Willie Stargell was no small man, so I think it's fitting. But, yeah, I think they're great. I think they're fantastic. And I'm looking forward to someday looking at the Seaver one because I think the uniqueness of him, again, I was listening to your great show yesterday, and talking about his knee is on the ground on the statue, his signature, you know, drop down and drive. And I bet you that's a great-looking statue as well.
Yep. It's an action statue. And as I said on the show, Robin Roberts, the great Hall of Famer, same thing, same style. So, I'm glad they did that. And I think statues are terrific at the ballpark. I love the Giants ones as well. Question for you. And this is interesting. And how do you evaluate hitters? There's so much now with analytics. And we talked about evaluating pitchers, defenders, how much ground they cover and stuff like that. What do the analytics tell you about hitters?
I would say that the analytics side of the hitting, probably the biggest statistic they evaluate is swing decisions. You know, are they swinging at strikes? And you talk about it routinely, how people that don't leave the strike zone just wear that pitcher down. The pitcher throws more pitches. You're not chasing. You know, you're not chasing that breaking ball out of the zone. So they can really quantify, you know, the eye of the hitter, if he chases or not, by the analytics. I think they do a little bit with bat speed, but that really doesn't enter into it, because you can not have the best bat speed, although it's a good asset to have. But there's a lot of good hitters that have, you know, relatively the same bat speed. If a guy does have tremendous bat speed, he still may not be able to hit. So I think the swing decision is the big mm-hmm. thing. And I think, you know, talking to Pat Burrell, we were talking the other day here in San Jose about what he looks for in the hitters. And it's being on time to hit the fastball, the good fastball. And, Marty, you know, we've seen Lance Niekro, who was a good-looking player for the Giants, come up. And, you know, Felipe said it right then and there after you watch him play for a week. He says he can't hit a good fastball. Mm. And if you can't hit the fastball in the big leagues and be on time to do so, you're going to have a difficult time in the major leagues. So I think that is one thing that people are looking at. I think you can change mechanics, your swing path. They can, you know, they can adjust those a little bit and smooth them out to get them shorter to the ball. But that's what I would say the analytics is looking at more than anything, is the swing decisions.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny. It brings up Estrada, and we won't dwell on this too long. But just watching him, he can hit the fastball, well. He can turn around the best fastball, but he's seeing nothing but breaking balls now. For a young player, he's got to adjust. What do you tell him?
Well, you know what? He's got to be smart enough to make the adjustment. You know, sometimes – you know, if you're a smart hitter, you'll sit on a breaking ball if he knows he's going to get it. You know, you look for it. And that's the art of hitting that, you know, you can't evaluate. What's in the inside the guy's head? Does he have a feel for hitting? You know, Felipe, again, used to talk about it all the time. You know, if you go up there, your first at bat, and you hit a home run off the guy's fastball, and then you get another hit on his fastball, you think you're going to get another fastball? Probably not. So now you look for his breaking pitch. So those are some of the things that he'll have to do. He'll have to make adjustments. And he's got a nice short swing. He's got a decent eye. He's got a nice approach. And I think he's off to a good start. That's because he's talented at the plate.
Mm, boy, a lot of fun. Great talking to you this morning. I'll let you go. I know you've got good Easter plans today, and we've got so much more coming up. And next week, early again next week, the Giants are in Washington to take on the Nationals. And we'll talk about visiting that city, too. I know that's a good stop on the tour. So have a great Easter today, Wo. I appreciate you being on, as always.
Marty, love being with you, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. That is our assistant to the director of player development and, of course, the former third base coach of the San Francisco Giants. There's nobody better than the professor to break down the game of baseball. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.